We'll start with some introductions. I'll tell you briefly about myself, and then Charles can do that, and then discuss what we're going to cover this morning. I'm Mike May from Sendero Group. I'm co-founder with Charles of Sendero in 2000. Previously, and as far as the adaptive technology business goes, I worked as vice president of sales for Arkenstone, and then I had an adaptive technology dealership before that called Customized Computer Systems in Ashland, Oregon. Charles?
Hello. Charles LaPierre. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Sendero Group, and I'm the GPS programmer, sole one and only.
And Charles and I have both been working on this for quite some time. For him, back to the days of his graduate studies in Canada, and me, really, from the time the concept of this incredible database of information and the GPS technology was really, it just made sense. And there's a lot of things that make sense. You've probably seen some research projects here that are talked about, and it make good sense, but the implementation is the real challenge. The time from when something is technically feasible until when you can actually pull it off as a product can be a huge gap. And I see this all the time. There have been GPS projects actually that went back to as early as 1980. And there's plenty that have come and gone, and there's others that are so focused on having centimeter accuracy that they don't ever get on the market. So I think our claim to fame in Sendero is that even though it wasn't perfect, it couldn't guide a blind person like a robot and wash your dishes and everything else, there was just as many flaws as there were benefits when we came out with this on a laptop in 2000. We didn't come out with it because, as a blind person, I wanted more information about my environment. And granted, I'm an information junkie, but I think everybody wants information about their outdoor and their indoor environment. So what we want to do is start out, particularly for those who are not as familiar with our GPS, to give you a little understanding of what is the current outdoor navigation, and then take some of those same concepts and say, well, how do we make things work indoors? Because there are a number of different technologies that can address indoor navigation. And like every single piece of technology in those rooms across the hall from here, there's always trade-offs. If it's smaller, that means the keyboard is hard to use. Or if it's smaller, it might be more expensive. If it's bigger, you get another feature, but that means it's not as convenient. It's heavy. It's a world of trade-offs. And the exciting thing is, in this day, users actually have an option when it comes to GPS. There are at least three possibilities, and one could argue more, depending on how many trade-offs you want to deal with. So let me give you an overview of what that is in terms of outdoor navigation. And I think the best place to start, and since we can't go out and do a demo, is to give you a brief, to let Beyond Tomorrow, an Australian station that did a piece on GPS in San Francisco, and then they subsequently sold this to the Discover Channel, and it ran here in the U.S. And it's a nice little four-minute synopsis of how the BrailleNote GPS works. And you can picture, of course, that any of the GPS systems would operate in a similar fashion. So if I can find my cord and fire this up, we'll do it.
San Francisco, one of the great cities of the world. Everywhere you look, there's something new to see. But what if you can't see? One of the best guides of this beautiful city is this man, Jerry Coons. And he's blind. Jerry has built his walking tours business around a system called BrailleNote. Essentially, a highly accurate GPS coupled with a PDA and Braille keyboard programmed with just about every tourist spot in the United States. The inventor of the BrailleNote is fellow San Franciscan Michael May.
Not quite right.
Well, if I can tell from the sound and from my data that we're coming up to the cable car.
The BrailleNote system consists of a compact satellite receiver, which is worn on the shoulder, and a personal data assistant, or PDA. The software cross-references your GPS location with preloaded references of streets, landmarks, and other city features. The information is delivered to you via a digital voice and via the Braille keypad, a system of small lugs which raise and lower to form Braille letters. The GPS utilises any of the 24 worldwide satellites that are within range.
So, Anna, I think the best way to really understand how this all works is for you to try it. I just happen to have a blindfold. Would you put this on and then see what it's like to navigate with just with hearing?
Okay. I'm in San Francisco with a blindfold.
But see, I carry this around because whenever I see there's an attractive woman, I hand her the blindfold and say, take my arm.
Did it work?
Well, it did, didn't it?
First up on our tour is the famous Lombard Street.
Well, it's amazing that you're trusting me to walk down these stairs along the crookedest street in the world someday. The GPS is not for obstacle detection. It's for telling us what's around. Like, what is the street up ahead of us?
On Lombard, near Leavenworth.
So we're on Lombard near Leavenworth. You can hear there's, it's all clear. We can go ahead and cross. You are trusting. This is definitely a case of the blind leading the blind, isn't it?
Yes.
Along with street names, major buildings, and tourist attractions, the Braille Note has listings of restaurants, bus and tram stops, and everyday facilities like ATMs. It's accurate within 10 metres or 30 feet, and it alerts you within 200 feet when you approach them, or you can prompt for information at any time.
We're on Montgomery, headed down towards the Transamerica Pyramid Building, and we can find out exactly how far.
155 meters blue and black.
I'm going to take a look at it. It's scary.
I can ask the Brillo where we are, and it says...
3 kilometers long and black to a Golden Gate Bridge, south tower, west.
Oh, I can't come to San Francisco without seeing the Golden Gate Bridge. Oh, wow, it's gorgeous. Well, I must say I've really enjoyed my blindfolded tour of San Francisco. It's one thing to come to a city and see all the sights that you see in the postcards. It's a completely different experience to have the smells and the sounds intensified. And the Braille Note here gave me that little bit of reassurance that I needed that told me where I was every time. This is a good opportunity, Michael. Let's take a photo.
Hey, nice little... I love the Australian sense of humor. They just don't get that from the U.S. media. Got to work it. So the Braille Note has really is the platform that we're currently operating on, coming from a laptop originally, and we've evolved now 6 versions. We're coming out with a 3.5 version, and essentially all these GPS systems work with the same concept. I suppose what's unique about the Braille Note is that it's specifically designed, very command-driven for blind users. And having the most number of blind users of any GPS system out there, we have the benefit of a lot of feedback from hundreds and hundreds of people. And after 6 versions now, we've implemented a lot of features down to really picky things that blind people want to help them in their navigation. All the systems have the basics, which are: where's the next turn? Where's my destination? They don't all have one of the things that I think is very important in an outdoor and also will be true in an indoor system. It was what we refer to as the look-around capability. And that's because the sighted systems or anything that's based on a system for sighted folks, they don't need a look-around because they have them built into their head, their eyeballs. A blind person needs some way to look around. So we have this concept that every X number of seconds, we scan the environment and find a new data point that's now where you're located, and it comes up and it says Starbucks, 322 feet to your right. You don't have to touch anything. This is just the database and the GPS working together, announcing through the Braille Note to tell you what's there. A very powerful, powerful tool. The challenge these days is, it used to be we didn't have enough point of interest information. Now the challenge is, there's so much. How do we screen?
And of course, we have the ability to select categories. If you only want to hear about restaurants, that's all that's going to trigger. And we're continually tweaking this as users say, I want it to behave a little differently. For example, people say, I don't want to know what's 300 feet behind me. I only want to know what's 300 feet ahead of me. Okay, so that's something else we have to do. It just keeps evolving. One of the concepts of the GPS that's really made this all work, well, one is that it's free, and we take that for granted. But when you think about it, at $90 million per satellite, there's 24 of them, that you've got a multi-billion dollar system in space that, of course, whatever it costs to maintain these things is pretty substantial. And those signals come down, and they're free. So when you complain about the fact that you might have 50-foot accuracy one time or 10-foot accuracy another time, just remember you get what you pay for. It's awfully nice to have it free. And when we get nickeled and dimed to death with all of these $9.95 fees per month, it's nice that there's one thing where you don't have to pay. We take that for granted. That's one essential component. The positioning information is free, and somebody maintains it. It's also infrastructure independent. Those satellites are up there. They're used for military purposes, for all of our civilian uses. We don't have to worry about it. Think of that concept and try to transpose it indoors. What is there that's free and ubiquitous indoors? And that's kind of the starting point. You start thinking, well, what is there? Well, there's a lot of power plugs around. There's a lot of lights. Are there other signals? And yeah, you think of it, you don't feel them, so you don't necessarily know they're here. But in this room, there's probably a lot of Bluetooth from our cell phones. There's a lot of cell phone signals. Probably some radio stations are creeping inside here. Wi-Fi is drifting around. So you probably have about 5 or 6 different signal types that are floating around in this room. And we start thinking about how can we take advantage of those? Because preferably, we want to be as infrastructure independent as possible. There are some systems. You could design some very accurate, wonderfully functional indoor systems if you could set up the position points yourself. And certainly Talking Science is a good example of how that's been well implemented. And it's great in the transportation centers where you find the Talking Science. But to modify the entire country or world with Talking Signs probably isn't in the foreseeable future. So how do we extend into other buildings that aren't going to have Talking Signs? What's out there? There's no good solution right now. Everything's research and development. But we are looking at, there are some possibilities, and in order to get from feasibility to reality, we have to test some of these things out. So Sendero Group has been leading a consortium of universities and Smith Kettlewell Institute in looking at various technologies, and I'll explain some of those for indoor navigation and some of the pros and cons. And Charles can chime in at any point. Wi-Fi is one, and where you have Wi-Fi, it certainly is good, and it's free for the most part because you don't have to log into the Wi-Fi. You just need the signal. So you can triangulate on the Wi-Fi in a similar way that you can triangulate on GPS. It's a little difficult to have the same kind of relative position change, but you could find out where the Boston room is using Wi-Fi. And we've demonstrated this. One of our partner universities built a prototype, and we tried it out at one of our conferences and one of our get-togethers, and it worked in the hotel.
Now, they had to go around first and map out where the signals were from the Wi-Fi for that particular building, and then we were able to use it.
Good point. There's a whole other aspect. One is the positioning, and one is the database. And we haven't even gotten the database yet, but you think outside, we also have the benefit, it's not free, but the data is being built up by these various companies, TeleAtlas and Navtech and others, and they're compiling the points of interest in the street maps. And so the outdoor environment has been mapped. When we first started with GPS, we were operating without maps. And this is where we would have to start with indoor navigation. eventually, I mean, I'm sure there's blueprints of this building, and if those can be translated into something that could work with a positioning device, you could have indoor maps. But in the meantime, when we're testing, we have to build our database. And what that means is, in the outdoor environment, I walk to the front of the Marriott, I hit record a point, and I type in Marriott main doors. And I go to another place, and I record it there. And I'm slowly building my database. So as we're testing, we have to create this little mini database that we operate from. And from a practical standpoint, it's better than nothing. And particularly since you could share this data. Use this hotel for an example. Somebody could walk around and probably in an hour record a point at every single booth and a point at Champions and JW and Latitudes and the front desk and Starbucks. Elevators, maybe. I mean, that would help people a lot. Just right there. And we've done that. Not the entire exhibit hall, but we've mapped some of it just to test it out. So in terms of the, back to the positioning, the Wi-Fi is one way that's a thought. That there's the good news and the bad news. So it's free and it's fairly widespread. Some people say, will Wi-Fi go away when you have WiMAX? When cities like San Francisco and others have a citywide system that's transmitting from atop buildings and not from within buildings, all of a sudden the triangulation component is gone. You don't have that local signal to work from. Who knows where it'll go, but it's something people are looking into, and we wanted to track all of these things in order to kind of be up to speed when one of them emerges commercially. There's some other more bizarre approaches that I don't think have all that much promise. One would be using television signals. They're fairly ubiquitous and cheap. And there is a company that is developing, trying to use television signals. Cell phone signals are ubiquitous. And there's actually a product, it's misnamed, called Mini GPS. It has nothing to do with GPS, but they kind of try to capitalize on the idea and just use that name. And it uses the cell phone triangulation. And you can run it on your Nokia cell phone. The accuracy varies from, let's say, 500 feet to a mile. The benefit of it, a lot of the guys in Europe like it because there's more train service there, and they'll just have a mark at each one of their train stops, and they don't care if it's 500 feet off. It's fine. It's coming up to your, okay, it cues you, your train, you're arriving at your train station, maybe before they come on the PA and announce it, and a lot of times, as you know, these things don't get announced. So it's kind of handy and it's cheap, so why not? The cell phone signals can also be used in conjunction with other technology, and this is what's being done for emergency 911 use. Your cell phone signal might identify you in the Marriott, and that's as close as it gets you, but it can't say which room you're in. So how can you couple something else with the cell phone? And there's a technology called SnapTrack that was using little bits of GPS. Even if you can't get a complete GPS signal, if you can get a little splatter, that in conjunction with the cell phone, that's why they call it SnapTrack. It's a snap view of the GPS. There's even GPS signals in this room. You know, little pieces trickled in until we closed the door. And they're floating around. So if you could grab those and have some positioning between those two technologies, that's one possibility. A couple other technologies that we've been more actively pursuing. One is based on what's called dead reckoning. And dead reckoning means that if you know the place where you're starting, and you can keep track of once you move where everything is relative to that beginning point, then you can do some positioning. And this goes back, of course, to seafaring days, and that's how a lot of the navigation was done on the ocean. The device that we have is about a 5x8 box that you clip on your belt. And Charles has one, and we'll actually do a little demo here. And what that box has inside is a whole bunch of motion detectors. Every kind of motion you can imagine it's detecting. It's got a high-end compass. It knows if you're facing a little left, a little right. It has a pedometer, so as you take a step, it knows how far you're stepping. it knows if you go up, it's got a barometer. An altimeter.
I think it does a barometer.
As well?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And accelerometers and gyros. So it's a very fancy device that's been designed for the Army Land Warrior program. Again, the military technology trickling down to civilian use. And we've been messing with this for 3 or 4 years, and you worked on it 10 years ago, right?
Right. In my master's thesis, I actually built a indoor navigation system using just a regular pedometer that you can buy off the shelf at Radio Shack and hook up the electronics to a chip and detected your steps, and with an electronic compass was able to track myself inside of a building over 10 years ago.
And the major drawback of dead reckoning is that, unlike GPS that has this constant error that's 20, 30 feet, the GPS error does not accumulate. It just fluctuates. The dead reckoning, on the other hand, accumulates. So let's say it accumulates 15%. Over 100 feet, 15-foot accuracy, that's not too bad. That's the GPS level. Even 200 feet, that's not too bad. You get up to 1,000 feet, 150 feet off, that's a big deal. That's too much. So you ask yourself, self, how can I fix that? What if you could correct that error every so often? Good idea. Let's talk about some techniques for correcting that error. Because if we could keep it at the 15% level, let's say, it would be acceptable inside. Better than that would be great, but that's kind of my threshold, 15 feet. I can deal with that. If I'm 15 feet away from the champion door, I can darn well find it. I find it even without the technology, so you have to use all of your other skills, obviously, in conjunction with the technology.
You can smell the beer when you're within
15
feet.
That's right. So one way is you can manually correct for the error. So I walked to Champions. It says that I'm 15 feet off, but I'm actually going to JW's. I hit the space with the zero key, number zero on the keyboard, and it zeroes out the error, so to speak. Because I know I'm at Champions, I've corrected for the error. That means that my next destination, the distance is correct, because it's starting at zero rather than having this 15-foot addition. I get to JW, I'm probably right on, or if I'm a little off, I correct for it again. So that's a manual way of correcting for the dead reckoning error. The next thing we thought of was, is there something we can use in the environment that will correct for this automatically? Well, one possibility is to use it with GPS. So when you come into a building, you don't normally walk over 1,000 feet. That's one thing to think about. And when you go outside, the GPS picks up and it knows where you are and it can correct your error at least within 30 feet. So that's being done in this box. It has a GPS receiver in it, and the idea is you're inside, the GPS is, you're outside, the GPS is in charge, you come to the door, the dead reckoning indoor navigation takes over. You go back outside, the GPS corrects for the error. And that's the product that they're designing for the military. And it's working reasonably well. What we're working on, there's a company called Talking Lights. And the lights don't really talk, but it's, figuratively speaking, it's a talking light, because what it allows is for the device you have that you're wearing to talk. And what they do simply is take the ballast out of a light and they swap it out with a customized ballast that makes the light flicker at a unique rate that you can't, sighted person can't see, doesn't look any different, but an optical receiver can pick up. So all of a sudden you're using something that's already in the environment to give you positioning information. So theoretically you could, as the maintenance of these ballasts in fluorescent lights are swapped out, they just swap in ballast 001 and then 002, and they all have a unique flicker rate. So then you as the user can walk around and you want to mark a point someplace. It's just like having a satellite. It picks up the nearest fluorescent light. You hit record, type in a name, and now instead of 001, it says Champions.
And And we actually have tested this in cooperation with Benetech. We put in these fluorescent lights in the office of Benetech, had a number, and some people from Talking Lights come with us as well, and some, what was it, a mobility specialist came to monitor this test that we did. Hooked up the lights, and I created the points of interest of each light, where they were, like Jim Fruchterman's door, office door, Dave Offen, and where my cube was, Charles Lapierre, and on. And we actually were able to guide people, blind people, without their dogs. They just use their cane and this device, and it would tell them where they're going, and we created routes for them around the office, and they had to get from one point to the next. And we actually watched them and monitored them. And it was amazing that without the talking lights, with just the error accumulating, after a while they would get disoriented and start going in the wrong direction because there was no correction. When we had the talking lights, that would basically zero out the error every time they walked underneath one of these lights. All of a sudden, they were able to follow the routes quite quickly and get to their destination with only a few turns the wrong way, when the system didn't quite work as expected, probably because we didn't have all of the lights throughout the whole building. We only had a certain number of them. So it was a very interesting study that we did last summer.
And you can see that you wouldn't have to swap out every light. It could just be at strategic locations, let's say 100 feet apart, at the elevator, at Champions, every so often to just correct. So in our studies as we go forward, and when we do the phase two of this study, we're going to do it at Sacramento State Library, which is fairly complicated to get around, and a much bigger facility, and we're going to put in lights at key intersections and test it out in an even more sophisticated real-world environment. And the cost, you have to think of these things ahead of time. Will it really get into blind people's hands someday? Well, we'll see if it becomes feasible or not, but the cost is of the actual ballast is a couple dollars. Installing it, let's say, costs $10 or $15. Somebody's got to pull the bulb out and pop this other unit in behind it. So you got to allocate some expense for that. So even if it's $15 a piece, and it's not part of the regular exchange of components, because you've got to swap out ballast every year or two anyway, it's still fairly inexpensive. And from that standpoint, it's practical enough that we want to proceed and keep examining whether this technology makes sense or not.
Should we show them a demonstration?
I should say that the way that we're getting this information, we've told you about the positioning, a little bit about the database. We're listening to it through a Braille note, so we have an optical receiver that's plugging into the PC card slot, right?
Yes.
And then we have the PNM, the dead reckoning device, in the serial port. And so we've got about three or four different technologies working together here. And I'll, if you can't hear it, I'll call out what the Braille note is saying. But Charles will fire it up. So we've got a light up here on this desk, right?
Yes, we do.
This is a shop light, or one that you'd have under your counter on your sinks, above your sinks. And is there another one?
Yes, there is. I got another one.
Where's that one?
Over the south side of the, just on the other side of the screen over here.
Okay, so just across the front of the room. We also have, and haven't plugged them in, you can picture something like a nightlight. So it doesn't have to be just a giant fluorescent light. Obviously, if you build them into the infrastructure, that's great. But you could also plug these things in key locations if there weren't lights. I think the lights in here aren't fluorescent. They're incandescent, right? Turn the volume down just a hair. It's kind of distorted.
And now GPS version 3.5 beta 10. Loading maps. All maps loaded.
I actually just...
Volume 27. GPS receiver not detected. Turn on your...
So there's no GPS receiver, obviously.
Outside Boston Road.
so it just detected a talking light. You heard that chime.
Direct at door, Boston Room.
Let's see.
Hit the H key so we can see how the heading changes. Will that?
GPS at main menu.
Oh, sorry about that.
Set arrow GPS version 3.5 beta 10. Loading maps. Four maps loaded. GPS receiver not detected. Turn on your receiver or press the bar button.
Turn it off. I'm sorry.
Menu.
Here we go. That's one more time. That doesn't work there.
3.5 beta 10. Loading maps. Four maps loaded. GPS detected. No fix, but wiring satellites. Southeast. 156 degrees.
Okay, now he's turning a little bit the other way.
East, 71 degrees. Acquired position, 1,082 feet. 12 satellites.
Okay, we're going to go across the room and listen for that chime when it picks up the next
light. So I'm near the exit door here. It detected this light. Now I'm going to walk over to the other talking light. Oh, it just detected a talking light. I'm going to ask for where I am.
188 points found. Southside Boston Room 1, meet 6 o'clock north. Acquire position, 1,082 feet.
So I just walked from one side of this conference room to the other.
Southside
and
Boston Room 1, meet 10 o'clock north.
So it's 1 foot. I'm right here.
Arrows leap 1,712.54 feet 4 o'clock southwest.
And it just detected where our
suite was. Only 17 floors down. Maybe 19. So that's just a general idea of how it would work, and you can pick. And we've used it upstairs, walking around in the lobby, and we also had a demo going from. We had one of these lights at the HumanWare booth. Another one at GW Micro, and the same kind of thing would happen. I would really love to know where all of these exhibits are. Just to have, for no other reason, I want to have this research project to help navigate around the exhibit hall and know what's there.
Question?
Yes?
Where's the talking light on the south side of the building?
I'll show you. It's actually a small little device on top of where the
thermostat
is.
Okay.
It's using infrared. I could have put up another talking light just like this. That's for development right now, just that you could quickly put up anywhere.
Does it work with that? Could it have been that incandescent in the ceiling?
Not the incandescent. You'd have to swap it out for a fluorescent.
But you could screw in one of those compact fluorescent. Right. They're making those as well.
Oh.
Which is more efficient anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the Talking Lights Corporation, of course, has a business model that says these lights will make sense to go into hospitals, and this isn't just for the blind community. Their intention is that this will be a way of navigating indoors for people nationwide, and that's an important principle. We have the cost factor to look at. We have the infrastructure factor. But more than anything, whatever technology is going to work for us has to have an appeal to the general market and not be blindness specific, or it won't catch on. You know, we'll only have it in blindness agencies or in conferences. We won't have it around. Even if it's not in every building, it sure would be nice if it's in museums and hospitals and government buildings and a lot of public places. Other questions?
Excuse me, Mark?
Yes.
How does it is it affected by daylight? Let's say if the sun is shining through the window, will that sort of affect the batteries?
For the talking lights?
Yeah.
No. It's just the only thing that it'll even detect it reflecting off of a wall, and it gets a reflexive signal. Mm-hmm. It'll still detect the actual serial number of that that talking light. I don't believe sunlight, you know, as long as it can see the light, they've said that it actually could be picked up around, 15 feet away?
Yeah, depends how high, how strong the light is and how high up on the ceiling and various factors. And that's all part of what we have to experiment with and tweak. And there's this issue of, we want it to trigger when you're in the vicinity, but not too far away. On the other hand, you don't want such a small spot that you miss it. So that's something we'll be testing when we get to the phase two, I hope.
And what about radio tags instead of having...
RF tags. There certainly are plenty of people experimenting with RF tags. RFID comes in two essential flavors. One is passive tags that are very short range that you expect to have in supermarkets for products. And those are nice because they're cheap, but they're not wonderful because of the distance. As soon as you transmit further, you need more power. That makes it more expensive and bigger. So there's a little bit of a trade-off thing going on there. But there is the potential with the passive tags that they're ubiquitous, and they're so cheap you could just put some double-back sticky tape on and slap them up anywhere and everywhere. For experimentation purposes, people are plugging them in different rooms and using the RFID tag transmitters to be little locators. And this same concept as the talking light applies. It's a specific point that gives you a position to identify your location. And there's another grant project that we've proposed on and hasn't been awarded yet, that if it gets funded, then we'll be working on the RFID angle as well. Anybody else? Sorry?
Where do you submit the SBIR?
Well, that one's not an SBIR. That was a different one. But I don't want to jinx them by saying...
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
The truth is, with these grants, you have to submit about 10 for every one that you get. And it's a small enough market. The blindness market is small enough that it obviously doesn't come out of sales to be able to do research and development on these things that are very long range. So we try to work a lot with Department of Education, National Science Foundation, NEI, National Eye Institute. They're typically the folks funding this, either through an SBIR, which is a small business grant, or through some other mechanisms.
In the latest version of our product, we've been putting in a lot of work towards indoor navigation as well. You know, if you have this infrastructure of talking lights, so that you can create manual routes, and when you get to a turning point, you can specify those points as either a straight through point or a turn left and turn right. And when you have one of these navigation devices, the personal navigation dead reckoning modules plugged into the GPS, the Braille Node GPS, it will detect those, it will detect your heading, and then you can make the turn and actually follow routes indoors. And I've done it a number of times, and it works very well. So we've been putting in sort of, it works great outdoors as well. It's great to, you know, at a park, and you're coming up to a point, you're going to turn left on this pathway. It works the same way. It'll work indoors and outdoors. And so we put a lot of thought into, and not only just you name the point, let's say this is the path here, but you could also give it a description, watch out for low branch, so you can get extra information as well.
Yeah, it's a good point that the dead reckoning is also a benefit outside, and it helps smooth out the GPS error if you're using the two in conjunction. It wouldn't work in a vehicle. This is not this particular type. You'd need an inertial navigation to work in a vehicle. But certainly when walking and being in an urban canyon area like Manhattan, having the dead reckoning would really help fill in the blanks when the GPS signals are reflecting and multipath.
Absolutely.
Giving you a lot of error.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's meant to work that way, and that's one of the benefits the dead reckoning people are pitching to the Army, is when these guys are crawling through the jungle and they don't particularly have good satellite coverage, there needs to be some mechanism for keeping them guided very carefully.
Yes?
I've always heard that 30 feet of accuracy on the GPS is imposed by the government to keep it kind of loose so no one
uses
it properly. But kind of similar to your resetting approach, if you were to just sit in one place outdoors, for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. I don't know how quickly that air gets wiggled around, but could it average all that out, that air, and find it a little more precisely?
Theoretically, we could do that. We don't have an averaging mode, but you could do that. You could start taking all the points and then pick the average of those lat longs and create a point of interest from that. There we go, another feature for me to write.
But the satellites are moving all the time. There's so many variables, so that bubble that's fluctuating, it would be really hard to get a handle on it.
It's too hard to get a read.
Yeah.
Yeah, just too many variables, and the atmosphere is changing how the signals are penetrating. There are correction systems. You can subscribe to a service for $800 a year, and you buy a $3,000 receiver that will give you sub-meter accuracy. So if you have a few extra bucks and the motivation, you can get 1 meter accuracy now. The receiver is a little big. It's not as nice as this little small 2-inch receiver that I have with the Braille Note PK, but you could get the accuracy if you really had to have it.
That would work with your system?
Sure.
Yep.
Question?
Yes.
Are you considering putting this into another type machine? Many, many people could use this and want it, but they don't need a Braille Note. You know, they can't read Braille or whatever, and so they still need this kind of a device, though.
If we had unlimited resources, that would certainly be possible. The Braille Note was the first really sensible platform that came out. Others have come out since that would also make sense, but being a small company, we really couldn't spread ourselves so thin that we had a PacMate version and a Braille Note and a Braille Sense. And
no, I mean, I don't mean anything Braille device. Just say an iPad or something that anybody could use. Person who has some vision doesn't use Braille.
It's possible, and there are devices now coming out with screen readers for. See, we could make a dedicated device, but that's been done. That's what Trekker is. No, but it could. Yeah, there's no reason that this hardware couldn't run on any of these other devices eventually too. There's a lot of trade-offs. When we first thought about, do we work on a focused unit like a Braille Note that specifically everything talks and it's all sequential, it's command-driven, or do we... We went to manufacturers like Garmin and we said, hey, let's just put a little private feature in there for blind people, the verbose mode. Because a lot of these things have some sort of text-to-speech in them anyway. The car units do now. So let's just have a hold down the power key and the number one for 5 seconds, and it puts it into verbose mode. And we discussed the financial and development aspects of that, and it didn't work. It makes it more expensive, and when these guys are in a competitive market selling things for $100, you add $2 of costs, and they become uncompetitive because $2 translates into $10 when it's at the retail end. So they weren't willing to do it. And at this point, we're really positioned as the Cadillac of GPS systems in terms of the outdoor devices, and we'll just keep trying to get some of these grants to fund the indoor navigation. And this our development efforts so far have benefited other products, not just the Braille Note. And our presentations, we really, I'm out beating the drum saying, get something wayfinding. It doesn't matter which device it is, it's better to have some information rather than no information. One other technology that I didn't mention, our University of Minnesota partner is working on reflective, like a barcode, that again would be cheap. You could just slap up a label on a door, and there would be this reflective barcode label that could be picked up by a camera, and again with some position information. And it works. The tricky part on that end is that the hardware that it takes, you need a fairly serious camera at this point. Now, cameras are getting better resolution and better range and zooms and so forth, so maybe at some point that technology will make sense. It's very rudimentary at this stage. We've tested it. It works. It's an interesting concept because of the low cost of the units that you, the pieces you could put up around to identify your building. There's another technology that the VA in Atlanta has worked on for some time where they would embed a signal along with a Braille label. So you're sticking up labels on hotel doors and other places anyway. Why not have something else embedded in there that transmits a signal that, because you don't always know where that label is or even that it exists. So if you could transmit a signal that could be picked up by some sort of sensor, then you could benefit from that. They call that cyber crimes.
Yes?
Is there any advocacy to implement things like this a little bit faster with regards to disaster prep and
that's a good,
building evacuation?
Yeah. Security issues, disaster plans, that's very much getting more into the forefront of thinking. People are asking for those solutions. And I think there's probably some grant funding that if you spin it that way, that certainly is an argument that will benefit you in possibly getting funded.
Any other questions?
Just a thought about the talking lights. So I gather that each lane would be coded in some way, and you still have a database stored in your Braille note.
Well, we've actually, part of one of the grants that we did with the Talking Lights folks was to do a wireless delivery system of the database to the Braille note, and we actually tested that during those studies last year where we had a Wi-Fi card in the Braille note, and it downloaded it. When you walked into the Benetech office, you downloaded the database of points, and then you were able to follow it, so theoretically, it could be done like that, or you can go to a website and download the database for the particular building you're going to be going to that has this system.
What about false code modulation of the flicker rate? So the thing actually literally transmitted its own data on the Boston line.
They've done that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's more the talking signs approach. They said, okay, well, let's have the data actually be picked up in the little receiver. And they thought about that particularly in terms of airports for tourist information and gate information and so forth. And that's where the original talking lights concept came from.
The GPS question for the Braille GPS?
Yeah.
I saw in another seminar folks down in Australia use waypoint barriers instead of waypoints to show or prevent somebody from veering off course, for example, on a college campus. Can the Braille GPS do something like that?
We could take advantage of any signals that communicate in the right format electronically. So, for example, I mentioned the 1 meter satellite system. You could also, you know, for farming and other industrial applications, you can get centimeter accuracy, and that's achieved by putting a local transmitter at the farm. So you're picking up the GPS signal, but you're also picking up a specific correction for that location that gives you this super accuracy. So you could instrument any environment, and we've thought about doing that for CSUN. Let's just blow people's socks off. We're going to have this 1 foot accuracy around here. It's not really fair because then people are going to think, well, that's the way the Braille note's going to behave around the rest of the world, and it won't. It only behaves like that in a specific place. So you might have a situation, though, let's say a camp or a facility or someplace where there are blind people around, and you want to have this super accuracy, or maybe you want to be on a beach and, you know, drive a dune buggy or something. You can do it with some sort of local positioning information.
And if I actually understand this correctly, theoretically we could do what they're doing with just GPS, let's say, with the 30-foot or better accuracy. What you could do is you have these points, like a route along that you're trying to follow, and you want to stay within 5 feet of that path, that route, so you don't want to veer off. So we could actually put up what I think they're doing. I didn't attend the talk, so I'm not sure exactly how they're doing this. But in theory, we could. So when you step out of that, we could say, oh, yeah, you have to veer left. We could probably do the same thing they're doing. What you could do right now with our system, without me touching anything, is Where's the next? What's the next waypoint? Is it at 12 o'clock? It's at 11 o'clock? It's at 3, you know, 1 o'clock? Okay, I have to veer a little bit to the left, veer a little bit to the right, so it will keep you on the path. And as long as you put these waypoints, and you can create your own routes, and you can drop these waypoints every 10 feet if you want, so you could keep on your route very well in that sense.
We've taken a philosophical approach, which is give the information to the user and educate them how to use it. We don't necessarily tell them what to do. Now, we've started modifying that a little bit because of the commercial GPS systems. They say turn left. They don't say your turn is at 9 o'clock. Do what you want. And there's a difference between those two things. And so in navigating to a waypoint, we say your waypoint's at 11 o'clock. Now, that implies that if you want to go to that waypoint, you better start veering left. We could be more emphatic and just say, veer left. We could have beeps, even, that you start to go a little too far. We could just drive you nuts with this information. And I think for some users, it would be beneficial. They want to hear veer left or veer right. And if there's enough demand from users to take that approach, we could capitulate and have an option. We have an option for everything else. Why not that?
Could I ask one quick question? I know that you guys are doing, CNI is doing a series of trainings on GPS of your dogs. What is there different about using the GPS system of the dog versus
cane? Good question. We, of course, as a dog user now in Dog 5, I've thought about this a lot. But the CNI sent 7 people to an event we had last September, and we spent several days together with 20, 30 blind people in their GPSs and got a real intense understanding of what the issue was. And the main thing that they commented was that when you're walking along, the GPS user will frequently, particularly the new user, will think, oh shoot, where's my destination? They stop, and they drop the harness, and they hit the D, and they're looking for the destination. The dog's saying, why are you stopping in the middle of the block? There's no obstacle here. Normally, you go to the curb, you cross the street, you go to the next curb, and the dogs are distracted by this. So you take a new GPS user, a new dog user, and you have a potential for some real distraction and difficulty. So what we did is we created what I've internally called our CNI mode. And since the GPS can tell when you stop moving, we said, okay, what if the user can select what they want to hear when they stop? And that's what we did. So you want to choose, I want to hear the distance to my next destination, I want to hear where the next intersection is, and I want to hear my heading. Boom, 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 3 things. So you put in the commands to do that, and now you start walking, it's not saying anything, and you don't get enough information, so you stop. You don't have to drop the harness now, or your cane, you just... It just triggers automatically, stationary mode.
So you stop and then it tells you.
Yep. You can also have those same three pieces of information trigger every 5 seconds.
Right. Just tell you whenever you want.
So we call it multiple repeat or stationary repeat. Yeah. And that specifically came from that situation presented to us by the CNI. Of course, it benefits everybody. It doesn't matter what kind of dog you have. I should say we're getting close to when we need to wrap up here, but in terms of this dead reckoning technology becoming commercial, they've been working closer to a consumer model, not just a military model, because the consumer model means it's got to be under $1,000 for the GPS and the dead reckoning, at least for the hardware. And their intention was to have a cell phone size unit out sometime this year. I think we're going to see our unit updated in the next couple months to something a bit larger than a cell phone, but getting close. So the company is moving towards a consumer product, and I think that's a critical factor if we're ever going to have this dead reckoning be part of the indoor navigation solution. You can, by the way, use the talking lights without the dead reckoning. So it's not as though we're committed to these two things working together. We're using them together. They complement each other. However, there's a possibility that some other indoor navigation systems will prove to be more beneficial, depending on how they're adopted by the general market down the road.
Yeah, if you don't have the personal navigation unit, the dead reckoning, and just the talking lights, then it won't be able to track you in between lights, but it'll be able to track you from light to light. So once you arrive at a light, then it updates your position, and then you can look for other points of interest around you and head towards that next talking light. So it could guide you that way as well.